Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Now, the first segment of our show is a post-dated interview. So some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Ron Korestein from Community Living. So, tell me a little bit about your work with Community Living.
Well, I'm the executive director of Community Living Chatham Kent. We are an agency that provides services to people who have diverse abilities. We employ over 270 people, and we have over 550 people who access our services.
So what types of disabilities do you most commonly see in your work?
I would say the majority of people have an intellectual disability, so we do support people who have medical complex needs. We support people who have autism, and we also support people who have Down syndrome. So a variety of abilities. I like to say people have diverse abilities, and so we support many people with very diverse abilities.
So can you take me through some of the programs and services you offer?
Sure. So we offer residential services. We have homes where people reside. The homes are the people's homes where the people receive 24-hour care and care. A variety of different things go into that.
When it comes to the job program you mentioned, do you work in partnership with the employers themselves?
With our JobWorks Employment Services program, it's really important that it's a three-party connection or relationship. You have the person who obviously is the employee, you have the employer, and then you have the organization, Community Living Chatham Kent. And the three parties have to work in partnership. So, for example, as an agency, we would assist the individual to secure employment, and we would provide job coaching and job retention, and we would also, to the employer, provide any type of support that an employer may need, whether it be an understanding of the skill level that the person is bringing. Occasionally, you may have an employer that wants to alter the job, so we would provide guidance on how best to do that, and we would become involved with the job coaching for the employee. So that's really how the JobWorks Employment Services program works from a standpoint of the employer, the employee, to the agency. It really is a three-party relationship that is necessary. And eventually what we see happens most times is that the person becomes extremely successful in the position, and we as an organization fade back and fade out of the picture. Not totally, but our involvement becomes absolutely minimal, because what you really want is that employee and employer relationship to be a natural relationship, like all other employee-employer relationships, and most times that's what we're able to do.
So, are there any challenges in delivering such programs?
Oh, absolutely. In a lot of cases, at least at the start, we've had our support employment program in place for, 31 years, I think now, and we probably don't see the challenges that we used to, but in the beginning, sure there were challenges, because from an employee standpoint, that often was a person's first opportunity to work in the community, and so that was really, as special as it was for the individual, it was really a scary thing for a person to be embarking out on a career when they had no friends who had done it at that point, so they had nothing to look at to say, well, geez, a friend has been successful, maybe I'm going to be successful. So it was scary moments for a person, and also for an employer, because a lot of times an employer hadn't hired somebody who had diverse abilities, and it was new to that business. So back when our employment program started, it was very, it was new to the person who was going to be the employee. It was new to the employer, which of course caused a little bit of uneasiness, uncomfortableness. But now that you fast forward ahead to where we are now, and we recognize that people have all kinds of skills and talents, and here we are 30 years later, and you have individuals going to work, and they're looking back in the past and seeing a lot of their friends and peers went to work and were successful, and you're having employers who are seeing that other employers have hired people with diverse abilities, and they've had wonderful experiences and had excellent employees. So now it's not nearly as uncomfortable or as uneasy for people. But in the beginning, there certainly was an element of uneasiness and uncomfortableness for both the employee and the employer. But I think now, in 2021, you see where everybody has gifts and talents and skills, and they're just waiting to be tapped into, and many employers are eager to tap into all of those skills and talents that people have.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with community living, what's been the greatest success you've experienced?
Your teaching standpoint, I think as we've gone along the last few years, our strategic plans and whatnot have guided us, and they've become a little more in-depth and have given us, real good guidance. So those are, I guess I've had several things that I've watched, and the greatest thing that I've observed in my time here have been the successes of the people who access services, seeing all the people accomplish different goals, whether it's going on a cruise somewhere, or getting a job, or obtaining their own apartment, or a driver's license, or buying their own car. Those are the greatest things that I've had a chance to view, and those are the things that I will most remember when my time here is done.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
So, I understand there's an ongoing need for PSWs and some encouragement being offered to people to come out and fill those positions.
Absolutely. So we've the last few years, we've noticed that it's been difficult for whatever reasons to recruit personal support workers and people who have a developmental service worker diploma, and we really are looking now to increase that recruitment. We'd like to see more people enter the field. We think it's a a great career of choice for individuals. An individual, a person can take the personal support worker course. It's an 8-month course at college. There's the developmental service worker apprenticeship program offered at St. Clair College here in town. And we really would like to see, from a recruitment standpoint, we'd like to see more people go into the field so that, we have a greater base to recruit from, particularly during this pandemic, when people in some cases had to choose between employers that can leave an employee with a staff shortage and whatnot, or people need to take a leave for a health issue or things like that. I can't emphasize enough, we really would like to increase the number of people going into this field. It's a great career we think people would enjoy, and we would really like to have a larger base to recruit from.
Thank you very much. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Jocelyn Lamont from Candlelighters. So, can you tell me a little bit about Candlelighters?
Well, Candlelighters is a not-for-profit organization here in Ottawa, and we provide programs and services for families of children who are diagnosed with cancer. And so that's anybody that is 18 years of age and younger at the time of their diagnosis. And so our organization provides services for the entire course of the childhood cancer journey. So we have programs for families of children on treatment, for families of children off treatment and survivors of childhood cancer, as well as bereaved families.
So, in terms of the diagnosis itself, when a family finds this out, what's the typical reaction?
Well, it's devastating. I mean, I think the biggest thing that we see most families are faced with is they're afraid that their children are going to die, which I think is the most common reaction that we see. And so it's also very isolating. You feel like you're all alone, that no one really knows. A lot of people don't know anybody, obviously, who has had a child who has cancer. And so they're feeling very alone and scared. And so that's one of the big things that we do is we just want families to know that they're not alone. We have a membership of over 300 families in our portfolio. And so we're there to help them in any way that we can through the entire course of their journey. So
what are the most common supports that these families make use of?
So financial assistance is a huge one. It's been reported in various studies that one-third of after-tax income can be spent on out-of-pocket costs. So things like gas for their car, driving to hospital, parking at the hospital. When their child is at hospital, and they're there for days on end, they, the parents, need to eat. There's child care for children at home that are not able to be at the hospital. So out-of-pocket costs are very cumulative. They happen very quickly, and they can be tremendous. So financial assistance is a big program for us. Support groups is also something that parents tend to access quite frequently. And with technology as it is today, there are lots of means to be able to connect families together. We also provide children with iPads because they are oftentimes not able to be in the classroom because of their treatment, and so they can stay connected. And what we've seen through the pandemic has been, lots of everybody in Ontario, all the children are accessing their education through online. And so children with cancer, we've been seeing these types of education accesses for a number of years. So the iPads are absolutely invaluable for education, but they also help people keep connected to their families and their friends and so on. So those would be the big programs that that we have families access. But we have other things like Courage Beads for children so that they can recount their program. We provide resources for families. We give e-readers to families and we provide them with resources so that they can understand about their diagnosis, about the medications, the impacts, things that they can look out for. Because we really believe that understanding is empowering and it helps take away some of the fear and gives families a sense of control.
So How do you go about reaching out to the families who could benefit from your work?
So we're very lucky to have a great relationship with the staff at the hospital. So the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, we work very closely with them. So in order to become a member of our organization, you have to be referred to us through one of the members of the healthcare team. So typically that's an Interlink nurse or a social worker. And so you have the opportunity to not become a member if that is what you choose, but we don't see that very often at all. I think three times in my 22 years has that ever actually happened. But it is by referral basis only.
So what are some of the challenges in supporting these families?
Well, I think that one of the biggest things is that they're scared and they're filled with fear, and reactions can be based on emotion. And so I think sometimes people are resistant a little bit to accepting help. And the other thing I think is that just families, different cultural backgrounds, you know, sometimes things that we think might be helpful are not. And so as an organization, we've had to grow quite a bit in terms of understanding those types of things. But I just think that, you know, being present and available and allowing families to come to us, making ourselves open to any types of questions or a willingness to provide assistance for anything that they think might be helpful, I think is just so surprising for people, you know, that they're not used to having that accessibility. You know, just ask us because we're willing to you know, try and help in any way that we can. And I think that's challenging on both sides. You know, how do we get that message across? How do people access it? People don't want to ask for help. I mean, we know that. A lot of times people, you know, feel that they can do it on their own. And so I just think those might be some of the challenges that would be key.
So to look at the converse side of things, has there been a time when there's been a success moment for you? Maybe when you were able to help ease some of the mental health strain of a family who needed you?
So I have lots. I have lots of those stories. I mean, I've been in this role for 22 years, and so I think for me, some of the greatest things that I have seen are kids grow up, get married, have children of their own. I've seen lots of those, and so that's very heartwarming. I think that having bereaved families stay part of our network is huge, you know, letting them know that they continue to be welcome. I mean, it's a family of families when your child has cancer, you make close friendships on the oncology ward at the hospital, and, you know, you want to be surrounded with people who get your situation. And so if your child passes away, all of a sudden, you know, what has been your close friends and family over the course of however long that was, you know, you don't fit there anymore. And so, you know, for me to have a Christmas party for families, not that we had one this past year, but in years past, when, you know, we have a big holiday party and we invite families. When we get bereaved families come back with their other children and you see those smiling faces, that to me, you know, is a huge success, that those families feel supported and welcome. And that's really important to me.
I thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you could save a life one day, would you? In Ontario, there are over 1,600 people waiting for a life-saving organ transplant right now. Every 3 days, one of these people will die while waiting. By taking just 2 minutes to register as an organ donor, you can save up to 8 lives and transform 75 more through tissue donation. What you decide to do today has the power to make a lasting impact. Join millions of other registered organ donors in Ontario and give hope to those waiting. Register at beadonor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Ron Korestein from Community Living and from Jocelyn Lamont from Candlelighters. In this segment of our show, we'll hear a little bit about Disabilities Athletics, Corey Lorenz. So, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with disability athletics?
Well, for me, the athletics part was a lot of my healing. My accident was 20 years ago, and I was 22 years old at the time, and I had just finished, I played a bunch of hockey and a bunch of different sports, and for me, when I put my hockey equipment on again for the first time, which wasn't that long after my accident, I actually felt much better than when I had my equipment off. For me, I was very self-conscious of people's eyes and what they were looking at and how they viewed me. But when I had my gear on, everything was covered, and I just felt like I could be myself, and I was accomplishing things, and I was feeling good again. So that was the biggest reason for me to get back into it. And I love the sport still, don't get me wrong, but loving the sport and having all those other feelings with recovery, it just made a great combination.
So, if you're comfortable sharing, can you tell me a little bit about the accident itself and how it affected you?
Yeah, that's no problem at all. So, I live on a farm, doing farm work, and what happened was, this was just after my wife and we were in our first, I guess we were 6 months married at the time, and she was coming to the field with me to help me get a load of alfalfa. A machine malfunctioned, and it says the knives were off. I jumped down to clean it out. This was after it had plugged up several times. We were having issues with it. And I jumped down to clean it out, and it was, obviously it was still running a little bit. I reached in, and it took my hand off right at my wrist, my right hand.
So
from there on, it was a process was long and grueling. We didn't have a lot of success getting help that night, and we didn't have any much cooperation with the manufacturer of the machine. But long story short, she was great. My wife was great. She had me writing with my left hand basically the next day, and once we figured out there's nothing we could do but move on, we just kind of had the rest as history, and we were just kind of facing each day as a new challenge, and we accepted it head on.
So, can you tell me a little bit about what got you back into your sport and the impact it had on your mind as a form of healing you mentioned?
Yeah. My accident happened June 30th, so basically Canada Day, and I started skating already early September. Start of September, I was skating. So while I was in the rehab hospital in Toronto, I'm staying in a hotel, and across the road was a Canadian Tire. So for me, just to kill time, I was just wandering through the store, and I was trying to figure out, I've always been a guy that likes kind of creating and not really inventing, but just kind of finding ways to do things. So I guess while I was in the store, I was dreaming up ways that I could do what I wanted to do and get back to life. And one of the things I found was, I found like a universal joint for a ratchet set there, and I thought, you know what, I can use this to act as a wrist for hockey. So I went to work, and I made a little attachment that fit onto a stick, and I put on this joint up top, and I think it was the combination of it working when I played and me being able to figure out to get something to work. I think both of those excited me, and like I said, the fact that So while I was in Toronto, I'm a farmer, I just didn't feel like I fit in. And going in taxis every day, and I had people looking at me, and taxi cab drivers asking me, you know, uncomfortable questions and things like that. I did become very self-conscious of my appearance. So, like I said, once I put my equipment on, I just felt like I was covered up again. And I was decent at hockey to begin with, so I figured as long as I could be somewhat decent when I came back, I wouldn't be out of place, and people wouldn't think of me any differently, and they didn't. So my first game, I was just playing in the men's league at the time then. I actually got a hat trick, got 3 goals, and it just felt good. And I could just imagine, or I would hate to think if, you know, something went wrong or somebody had said something on one of those first games that was negative, that maybe it would have went, maybe I wouldn't have been playing as much hockey as I did, but everything went good. I had great reception from everybody, and just 1 second, sorry.
Sorry.
And yeah, it's just been great. And then going from, you know, just playing my rec hockey into the amputee hockey was just another step, because you hear the different stories of different people and the challenges and the perseverance and stuff like that. It's so motivating and so moving that it was just something I was so fortunate to be part of and thankful for all of it. That it just brought me, I guess it's just kind of rounded me out and made me the person I am. I appreciate things. I like to help out others. And it's just hockey and amputation is a direction in life that I never, you know, never dreamed of going. But now that I'm here, I've met some great people. So, you know, my children have a different outlook on life. And yeah, it's been good.
So in your time with amputee hockey, is there any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, there's a bunch of... When we were in Montreal in 2010 for the World Championship, the thing that I remember there is I had just about every family member on my side and my wife's side, you know, took the train to Montreal and was there to experience that. That was special. But there's also just other moments that are very important. You know, the first time that I met a double R man from out west, I don't know, something just really, just his perseverance and his personality and things like that just really has always stuck with me. And I tell his story to a lot of people of how his just outlook on life was amazing. And anytime I think I have a bad day, I think of him still to this day. So it's hard. There's a lot of good success moments that I've had with winning at the different tournaments. But then there's also those other moments that I think are really a lot deeper that are very important also. So each one of the world championships has been, you know, a great success and good moments. But I do take a lot of the smaller things that happen behind the scenes or behind closed doors that are very important to me. Very, you know, I put a lot of weight on them as well.
Like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, I've got time here now, sorry.
I've said it once, I've said it a million times. Disability life is all about finding a way to adapt what you're passionate about. The fact that you might have been in an accident or had your circumstances change should never be something that you use as an excuse to hold you down. A person is capable of anything, given the right motivations, the right moments. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.